On today's Compassion Radio.
My wife likes to joke sometimes when she goes out shopping. She says, well, it's still cheaper than therapy. but now there are people who apparently think shopping is itself therapy.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do. And this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Now in our 74th year of broadcasting on radio, welcome to Compassion Radio, a boots-on-the-ground ministry to the spiritually and physically needy in the most difficult places on earth. Speaking of boots on the ground, please keep Bram and Sandy Floria in your prayers as they are off as we speak to find out how the church is making tremendous progress in several former Soviet-controlled countries. They're going to gather some amazing stories from the front lines. We'll keep you posted. Today's classic program features a compelling interview that the late Dr. Norm Nelson conducted 3 years ago this month. He speaks to a gentleman whose book caused quite a reaction when it came out. In fact, Norm referred to it as what he called a stick of dynamite. Let's get started. Here's the Reverend Dr. Norm Nelson.
All right, our guest today on Compassion Radio is Dr. Craig Blomberg. And Dr. Blomberg is Distinguished Professor of New Testament at Denver Seminary. Dr. Blomberg, or Craig as we have permission to call you, welcome back to Compassion Radio. You've been with us before, and it's great to have you again.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Craig, you have written it's a book, but it's also a stick of dynamite. Because the title of the book is Christians in an Age of Wealth, and then the subtitle is A Biblical Theology of Stewardship. You know, that sounds very workable, but then I got into reading chapter one, and wow, I had to pick myself up, you know, off the ground or from being hurled against a wall. Because what you say is so true and so indisputable, well, let's just put it like this. Your first chapter has the title, What Are We to Do with All Our Stuff? The Current Dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
And you use a word that I need you to flesh out for us. It's a word affluenza, as a play on affluent. What is affluenza, and are we infected by it here, even within the church community in the U.S.?
Well, it's not my term. It was the word coined by a book turned into a movie that has been very influential in recent days, and it simply refers on the model of the word influenza or the flu, that being affluent can, yes, indeed, turn into a kind of a disease, something that causes more bad than good. As we become enamored with material possessions and constantly succumb to the advertisers who tell us how much more we truly need, even though we really don't. And you can find entire books now that are called about retail therapy. My wife likes to joke sometimes when she goes out shopping. She says, well, it's still cheaper than therapy. but now there are people who apparently think shopping is itself therapy.
And so it's really good for us, in other words, to go out and blow our paychecks on stuff.
Exactly.
Craig, what are we trying to work through, according to this whole analysis, this kind of therapy that you've just raised, this issue? What are we trying to work out?
Well, I think it's like any other habit that can turn into an addiction. If something is not going as well in life as we might like it, whether it's a marriage or a job or finances more generally, a relationship with someone we care about. Some people take to drinking. Some people take to drugs. Some people take to shopping, and one can be addicted to shopping.
You know, Craig, I remember a number of years ago being in a large store It was a megastore, and they used to make announcements over the loudspeaker to, you know, to the shoppers who were milling around buying things and window shopping and so forth. And they always addressed us with the phrase, "Attention, consumers." Consumers. You mentioned, are we a consumer culture here in America, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. At record levels. And we've created a consumer church. And now we are starting to see the commodification of relationships, so that just like I need to get to the latest model smartphone when my current one is starting to get a little old, I need to get the latest model spouse when my current one is starting to get a little bit old. And we've basically commodified human beings as well.
That is really sad. You know, I agree with you. And I would wonder this, Craig. Has this happened in such a slow way that it sort of sneaks up on you, just as maybe any addiction does?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. Those of us that grew up prior to the internet, the television became the piece of furniture that way too often brought families together. And the numbers of hours that baby boomers in particular spent watching television was utterly extraordinary. And unlike some countries in the U.S., it's all commercial television to speak of, once in a while a public channel. And so literally millions of advertisements that can't help but have their effect and their toll, and yet it's just natural. It's what you grew up with. You have to be taught to critique it.
You have some figures here. They're almost unbelievable. And they have to do with American spending problems. And between the years 2000 and 2005, in that five-year period, Americans spent $15.2 billion on boats, engines, and other marine products, $27.9 billion on candy. That blows my mind. $29.7 billion on pets and toys and playground equipment, $45 billion in state lotteries, $59.4 billion on jewelry and watches. And then it really ramps up suddenly, $203.7 billion on entertainment products and services. And then $288.7 billion on domestic travel and tourism. And then you compare those figures with another figure, $188 billion that Americans gave per year during this period to all charitable organizations put together. Entertainment,
right.
Entertainment and tourism dwarf what Americans have donated to charitable institutions. Has there been a downward trend, Craig, in giving to charity?
There has been slightly. It's up and down over the decades. There was a post-war peak, I should say, back in the 50s and 60s. And there was a time when the average American Christian gave almost per capita about 4% of his or her annual income to charities, including churches and Christian ministries. You can see a slight downward trend with some blips up and down, depending on the economy. In the years since, evangelicals have at times crept up slightly above 3%. Other professing Christians, somewhat lower. But probably the most striking trend, if you talk to fundraisers for a lot of churches and Christian organizations, is that with each successive generation or age group of people, the percentage of giving drops. So the veteran generation that lived through World War II, my parents and their peers, on average, are still the most generous giving. Boomers a little less so, Gen Xers a little less so, and millennials barely so. And one could hope it's because many of them have yet to become significant wage earners. But we can't just assume that if they get better incomes, all of a sudden they will give to nonprofits, unless there has been teaching or modeling for them along those lines.
Yeah. You have a very striking statement here. And you've just talked about the propaganda that communist nations used to use for building up their military and so forth, and not helping the poor and what have you. And they were telling lies to their populations as they were doing this. And then you say, but it seems that Christians and churches in capitalist countries, and you're referring obviously to America here, among others, have gladly embraced the lies their cultures tell, sometimes even claiming that Scripture teaches these lies. What are you referring to there?
Well, now with the advent of the Internet, one of the more depressing phenomena is to see all kinds of people in local churches, and it's not just conservative ones, it can be liberal ones as well, who surf the Internet or who simply have things sent to them by others, and if it supports their economic presuppositions or their political leanings, they can imbibe them extremely uncritically. They can pass on pseudo-information that is actually grossly exaggerated or made up. It almost seems as if now that we have unprecedented access through the Internet to information on just about anything, we have become lazier than ever at researching anything and simply accept not information that's critical of our viewpoint. We can be very skeptical of that, but if it sounds like it supports our economics or our politics, whatever they are, we quote it, we pass it on to others, we blog it, and often without checking for accuracy at all.
You're listening to a special Best Of edition of Compassion Radio, featuring Dr. Norm Nelson, that was conducted 3 years ago this month. And we'll get right back to it in just a moment. Speaking of Norm, when you get a minute, be sure to visit us at CompassionRadio.com and see the loving tribute that's posted on our front page. It would mean so much to us here at Compassion Radio to hear from friends like you. Stay tuned for an announcement at the conclusion of today's broadcast regarding a celebration of life for Norm that we want you to be part of. Again, that's CompassionRadio.com. Let's get back to the program.
You know, I'm also wondering about the degree to which we tend to spend what God has given us when we give to His work. We tend to spend it on those things that increase our comfort, that that enhance our image in the community, big churches, elaborate services to the congregation. And you quote a gentleman here who is absolutely dynamite statement. He says, "We have preoccupied the passions of the Bride of Christ in America by transfusing her holy blood with our culture's blood of amusement and consumerism." So, and it seems that what you're saying there and quoting him in agreement is that consumerism has really affected the way we do ministry, our approach to being church. That's a tough one to take, Craig.
My wife and I were led by the Lord to begin a transition that took nearly 2.5 years to complete, of leaving a large, prosperous suburban church with countless excellent ministries for a small urban church plant in desperate need of a few stable older adults and, quite frankly, their resources. And it has been, for the last 6.5 years now, one of the most fulfilling and rewarding and challenging ministry moves that we have made as a couple. And countless appeals have gone out to all kinds of suburban congregations for more help, more people, where we have a total of perhaps nearly 300 folks who, with some degree of regularity, would consider our church their home. And we talk to congregations with 1,000 to 5,000 people in them. And we've had a couple couples come and check us out, but not stay. And pretty much everybody else who's involved has considerably fewer resources. And it's not glamorous. It's not what excites people. And it's kind of discouraging.
I think I can understand that to some degree. I really do. I remember one time my wife and I were with some missionaries who had come back to the States from Kenya, where the gentleman, and by the way, we were with this medical doctor from Kenya and one of his daughters. And we went to church together here in South Orange County in California, and to a large, prosperous church. And this man does surgeries on African children who have fallen into fires face first and have their had their faces just mutilated by the fire, and all kinds of restorative surgeries that he does. He's a hero of mine. And as we were worshiping there, his daughter leaned over to him, and I was able to hear what she whispered. She said, "Dad, I wish we had just a small percentage of what I'm seeing here to work with back in Kenya." And yeah. I thought, well, why doesn't this church give it? They'd be satisfied with a small percentage.
That's right. That's
and it would help them. But they were having to adapt all kinds of things that were not really intended for surgery and for other medical outreaches and so forth. I can identify, I think, with what you said, remembering their comment at that point. I'm also thinking here about the majority of evangelicals here in the U.S., I think, probably have a very difficult time considering the possibility that in other countries they don't have the safety nets, let's say, that we might have here,
right,
and in other Western countries. And there can be a resistance sometimes to anything that advances the notion that maybe there's a level of service that the government should provide those who are in poverty or in need. And I understand the arguments that run counter to that, and yet at the same time, I have a real difficult time handling statements that come from people who are resistant to that idea, who are very simplistic in their response, and who say, "Well, go and get a job." I can't imagine, you know, in the spirit of Christ, that being an authentic Christian reaction to so many of the needs that we see around the world and even here in our country. Do we have a problem, even in the political realm, would you say, Craig, in confronting a real biblical view of stewardship, in particular, if we are the haves and others are the have-nots?
It's complex. Almost anybody who makes the kinds of comments that you've mentioned has probably either personally experienced or knows people who have personally experienced, particularly in the downtowns of the bigger cities in the U.S., one or more con artists. They may have been scammed. Those people are out there. It's undeniable. I've given small amounts of money to a seemingly homeless person and watch them go off and hand it to their employer. I suppose we'd call them a pimp if it was in the sexual world.
Yeah.
And kicked myself for being duped by what I took to be a genuine line and a genuine need. And so that happens overseas, not so much, perhaps percentage-wise at the grassroots level, but huge amounts of aid that have been sent by governments, which almost by definition have to go to foreign governments, have been lining the coffers of the politicians of those countries, and very small amounts gotten to the truly needy people. And so it's easy in a world of overstimulation and over-awareness of acute human need to just become calloused.
Yeah.
And instead of trying to discern the smartest ways and the right people and right organizations to give to and how best to help, to just try to hold it all at an arm's length.
You know, I just came back from the border of Syria in Lebanon and in the refugee camps.
Yeah.
And my heart was broken as I saw people that had been gainfully employed, that had families that had been intact, but had had to flee their country and come to these refugee, very degrading situations,
yep.
Not because the government of Lebanon wanted them to be degrading, but because to be a refugee is, on the surface at least, it is a degrading experience. And it actually broke my heart as I looked at the children and the mothers and so forth. And yet there was an openness and a readiness to reach out to me and to befriend me. And to, I had this sense that there was an openness even to the generosity and the love of Jesus Christ, if we could only bring ourselves to give with generosity to help in this situation. But it is very difficult to raise money for a cause like this in particular. And people in the office here at Compassion Radio have heard this so many times and seen it. If it involves giving to Arab refugees or Arab anything, or to Muslim people by background, it is extremely difficult somehow for evangelicals to get over the enemy image of these dear people in need and to give. So we confront this all the time here at Compassion Radio. You know, I want to stress something, Craig, as we wrap this up today. You have been very generous with your time, and you've agreed to come back and to go through the book in a little more detail, because you have, as we said before, a biblical theology of stewardship. It's not just a book full of criticisms and shocking statistics and so forth. You, as a professor of New Testament and one of the most highly honored professors and teachers of the New Testament, have a very positive and, I think, extremely helpful approach to developing this biblical theology of stewardship. You've agreed to come back, so we look forward to that and invite our listeners to tune in tomorrow for another session with Dr. Craig Blomberg from Denver Seminary as we approach this whole issue of Christians in an Age of Wealth, a biblical theology of stewardship. We'll be back tomorrow with more on this very important topic. Thanks so much, Dr. Blomberg, for being with
us
today.
Thank you, Norm, very much.
Compelling stuff on today's Compassion Radio broadcast with Dr. Craig Blomberg. And don't miss our continued discussion tomorrow. Friends, we're going to celebrate Norm Nelson's life and incredible legacy, and we want you to be there to share it with us. This memorial service will be open to all of our Compassion Radio friends, especially those in Southern California. It's going to be held on Sunday, May 28th at 2:30 p.m. at Lutheran Church of the Cross in the city of Laguna Woods, California. Please call an RSVP at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Let's gather together and celebrate Norm's life. Come ready to join in powerful worship and bring your friends with you, especially those who love to sing. Meet the Compassion Radio team and meet other Compassion Radio partners as we come together to celebrate the life of the Reverend Dr. Norm Nelson. Once again, that's Sunday, May 28th, 2:30 p.m. at Lutheran Church of the Cross in the city of Laguna Woods. Get the details at CompassionRadio.com or by calling 1-800-868-2478. Thank you, and God bless you.
Friends, as we wrap up the month of April, I wanted to personally give you a quick update. First of all, I want to thank every one of you who responded to our appeal to join our new Compassion Radio Vision Team. We know that you have 1,000 places where you can give each month, and that you chose us is humbling, and we're very grateful. Because of you and the many special one-time gifts this month, we're making progress on fulfilling every one of our obligations to our radio station and ministry project partners. We're praying that many more will take us up on the invitation this year. If we could find just another few hundred listeners, home fellowships, or churches to join us with a monthly gift of $10, $20, or even $100, we would accomplish every single ministry goal we've set for 2017. And we'll keep bringing you amazing, inspiring, transformational stories of God's people doing amazing things in every corner of the world. Compassion Radio does what no one else does, and we help those who take the Great Commission seriously. So I'll ask you with all sincerity, would you join us? And would you do it today? Jim Governale will tell you how you can get started right now and help keep us on the air as your radio voice for Global Mission. Thank you so much. And be praying for Sandy and I as we head out to report on how the church is making tremendous progress in the former Soviet-controlled countries of Hungary, Slovakia, Poland, Ukraine, and the Czech Republic. We look forward to bringing that story to you in the days to come.
Thanks, Bram, and our prayers will certainly be with you and Sandy. As the Lord has guided this ministry over the last two decades of our 70-year history, sharing the hope of the gospel through the compassion of Christ has become a key priority of ours. It is a challenging calling. Give us a call at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Or you can always reach out to us on our safe and secure website, CompassionRadio.com. On behalf of the Compassion Radio team, I'm Jim Governale. Have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll be back with you again tomorrow for our next edition of Compassion Radio.